Red versus Blue fans. Welcome back to the Red versus Blue After Show by the Rooster Team on AfterBuzz TV Animation. Today we're looking at Season 16, Episodes 9 and 10. We are going to talk about memory issues, why you should maybe not call one of the pivotal scenes in your movie the maiming, and buddy road trips. See you after the opening.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin!
Yeah, we just kind of have to let that go at the beginning, you know?
Yeah, but I like how Megan was doing single notes, but was totally meedling on the fretboard.
Many, many notes all at once.
I'm the best at air guitar.
Obviously. Absolutely. Yes. Hi, guys. Welcome back. We're back. Everyone's back. It's great. This is the Red versus Blue After Show on Rooster Teeth Reviews on AfterBuzz TV Animation. I don't think I used on enough in that sentence. We are looking at Season 16, Episodes 9 and 10, Walk and Talk and Caboose's Travels. And tonight I have with me Megan Salinas.
Hey, everybody.
Mark Donica.
It's me.
Is it you?
No.
Okay, I guess we're doing another week without Mark. We're all going to miss him. He's lost in time somewhere. Bye.
We could get a lens flare and say Huggins is with us in studio.
We could.
I will not do my Huggins impression.
Do you have a Muggins impression?
God, no.
And I'm Katie Cullen, and we're here doing all sorts of great stuff. If you want to follow along, if you want to join in the conversation, we have the live chat on YouTube, and we have the hashtag that is RTReviews on the Twitter. So if you have any questions or want to throw anything in the conversation, or if you think we missed a spot, let us know, chime in, do the thing, win the stuff. What did we think of these episodes?
It's hard to say, like, because I feel like these episodes were a little bit of a mixed bag. It has some of, my favorite things this season, like the time travel explanation that we get, and also the road trip stuff with Griff and Huggins. It's some of the highlights of this season, but then other stuff doesn't grab me as much. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit of a mixed bag for me.
Yeah, and since I wasn't here the last two times, I'm so sad that I missed talking about Gus.
I know. Would you like to give us a quick rundown on your feelings on that?
Yeah.
While you've got the opportunity, just do it.
I'll do it very quickly.
Do it.
You've got to be fucking kidding me. That's what I said to myself. But it was one of those things earlier in the season. I went, that, like, one of the things that Red versus Blue always did is it always innovated. There would always be something new that they would do that they would sort of ride or take advantage of for a couple of episodes, if not a couple of seasons. And is something new technologically. And it's hard to do when Microsoft hasn't put out a new Halo in a couple mm-hmm. years, or, you know, how far can you go with armor sets in a Halo Machinima series. So it's not anything that I blame the creators on, but one of my favorite things about Joe is we've seen the creativity, we've seen the out there-ness of the stop motion episode back a couple seasons ago, and now of this, of the old Harryhausen-esque live action giant, which is just the weirdest flipping thing in the world. It sort of carries on these couple of episodes is by splitting up the main. I'll put it like this. It reminds me a lot of Star Wars, and not in the best way, because as broken down from episodes 4, 5, 6 to 1, episode 4 ends with all storylines converging in one place, in one event. Episode 5 ends with two storylines converging in two different places in Cloud City. Han's group and then Luke doing the lightsaber battle with Vader. And then 3 is everybody in space, everybody on the moon of Endor, and then Luke on the Death Star. And then episode 1 is Jar Jar at war, the lightsaber battle, Anakin in space.
And pod racing.
And, well, no, pod racing isn't part of the final thing.
Just at the end.
But Anakin, yeah, in the very end. So, and then Padme in the throne room. So that's 4 stories with 4 different emotional payoffs. Sadness, heroicism, excitement, comedy, whatever.
Utter disbelief.
And they're trying to make that tell one story because they're all featured in one thing. And I'm getting a similar vibe of episode one in this season of Red vs. Blue, which is a really weird thing to say. But it's they're trying to get different reactions and different emotional payoffs from the different groups together. So going from, and they're all trying to say different things. And so it leaves you sort of, not confused, but muddled. It leaves you, and it's not messy. It's one of those things that I will repeat again, something that I said at the beginning of the season. By the time we reach the end of the big arc, all of this stuff will make sense. We will have all of the payoffs that we want and everything will feel right. Now, right now, as a series, I don't think it's as fulfilling as it can be.
It's a little emotionally disjointed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I honestly think that season 10 is the best season 10.
What it's the
gonna,
hell?
It's going to be one of those shows, y'all.
May.
Episode 10. It was May.
Mm-hmm. Not
we're
any,
done, we're it, done with May.
It hasn't
we're
been
done.
May for
it's
a long
It's going to be
time.
July. Yeah, I think episode 10 is a pretty good example of all of that because mm-hmm. you have this incredible whiplash from Caboose's pictures to, you know, let me know if the paradox happens, if we're all still alive, to Wash, to Camel Toe. To, mm-hmm. we're bouncing all over the place.
Especially with Caboose, is he just came in, said a couple of jokes, and wasn't featured or mentioned at all in the rest of the episode. He was the payoff at the end of episode 9, but then it was essentially nothing. Like that whole experiment, they built up the drama so high of maybe Sarge is behind this door, maybe he's not, who's gonna check, I'm not gonna do it. And while the
I'm not afraid,
no, and the payoff was funny that it was Caboose, but then they took all of that explanation and all of that time and kind of made it meaningless by not giving it a proper payoff. It was very weird.
It has been a little weird. I feel like this is one of those seasons where I keep going, okay, I'm just kind of waiting for it to kick in. And I thought it was going to kick in when we got O'Malley. And I find that I'm still kind of waiting. Like, we're still doing a very slow burn.
Yeah, there's
and we are
a lot of slow setup.
Yeah, and we don't have any confirmation on how many episodes there are this season. No. They did say fewer, longer episodes. So we could be at the halfway point. We could be at 2/3. We don't actually know. But it's a little too far in the season to still be sitting here and going, I'm waiting for this to get going. Because even if it is a 2-season story arc, this is still a season that needs to be able to stand on its own.
So let me present this question, everybody, and sorry to kind of take the hosting hat away from you, Katie. But
no, go for it.
One of the things that I liked about sticking in the realm of Rooster Teeth, one of the things that I liked about fan service is they would talk about various series, whether it's current ones or old ones, and how many episodes it took for you to get into it. And it happened to me recently with... I say, oh my God, it was like a year ago. That's not recently, idiot. but how many
recently?
It shouldn't happen on season 16. Well, I mean, season 16, that's a landmark thing. That's great. But this far into the story, when you look at X amount of episodes, do you think, one, do you think we should be waiting, quote, waiting for it to get good? Or is that an expectation brought upon by the previous success? And then, follow-up question, how many episodes do you give a show?
My usual rule of thumb is 5. And that's for your usual whatever 22-minute show. If it's an hour-long show, maybe 3. Like, how many minutes of screen time does it take you to find your stride?
Minutes is good. Minutes is good.
For me, if it's like a 20 or 30 minute show, usually 8 is what I'll give it. Like, cause there are some where I'm like, my normal rule is 4, but for shorter shows, like I remember Tiger and Bunny took me a little bit to get into because it didn't grab me right away, but I was like, I know it gets good.
So Tiger and Bunny had me in the first 35 seconds. So
once it hit episode 8, I was like, oh, okay. And I sort of developed rule of 4 watching Game of Thrones, like, because I was like, okay, show, impress me. And then 4 episodes in, I'm like, shoot, I'm invested. But like for those first 3, I'm like, ooh, it's so good. And then episode 4 happened and I'm like, no, puppy.
and that's how they get you.
How I Met Your Mother is where I learned to give shorter shows, especially comedy shows, a little bit more leeway. Mm-hmm. Because in season one, they were definitely trying to find the style that worked for them and the format that worked best and the types of jokes that resonated with their audience. And I felt like by the time we got to the Liberty Bell, that's when I was like, okay, yeah, I'm in.
See, five is my rule of thumb because Transformers Prime.
If
a 22-minute show can give me a five-part season opener and go, okay, yeah, I'm set up for the rest of the series and maybe my life.
Oh, Transformers.
It was a movie. It's technically a movie if it's a five-episode arc that opens the season. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a length thing, though, too. So
Prime had me almost immediately. I hear Steve Bloom as Starscream, and I'm like, I'm in. Yes.
But this is for another show. What was your metric?
It varies. Like, I've been spoiled pretty recently. Around the same time, the show that in question was an anime called Tiger Mask W, which is a wrestling shonen anime. But one of the reasons why I made it to like episode 10 or 11 and I was like, I don't know still, because it's hard being a self-proclaimed wrestling professional and understanding the ins and outs of the scripted nature of the storytelling, and then watching a shonen anime where it's all real and just like, it's not hitting, but they're using the real talent and likenesses from one of the biggest companies in the world that's in Japan. I'm like, ah, oh, that's really cool. And then Tiger Mask, the character, both of the Tiger Mask characters that they created for that show had a match in the real world on one of the Japan's version of WrestleMania.
That's awesome. Like,
that's really cool. And I really want to support that type of crazy interworld.
Of that synergy.
Yeah. But ultimately I stopped watching it because it wasn't the type of wrestling program for me. But then there are shows like Kiss Him, Not Me that get me in one episode.
Yeah.
Or Yuri on Ice that get me in one episode. And I would have to say usually it's probably about three or four. Usually. But I'm usually pretty easy to impress.
Well, and in terms of screen time for this season, we're looking at 10 episodes averaging, let's say, 12 minutes apiece. Some of them have been longer. Some of them have been around 10.
Hmm.
So 10 episodes, 12 minutes apiece, we've got more than enough time. We're over, I think, almost all of our episode thresholds.
Mm. Yeah, but I'm also more forgiving of a show where I've been a longtime fan.
This is
bitten me in the past, that sort of commitment of like, oh, I'm in. It's definitely
Let's
come
go back
to
How I Met Your Mother and that ending.
How I Met Your Mother is an excellent example. Lost is another excellent example.
No Love Lost. Now available now. Download.
On iTunes. Mm-hmm. We just covered episode 5. White Rabbit.
I stayed with Once Upon a Time for far too long.
Yeah, so my wife carried it through to the end because she was just like, I'm not going to let it win.
Like if she stopped watching it, it would beat her?
Yeah. Because she had so much investment in various characters, and it was the characters that she was like, if Regina wasn't in it anymore, I would stop watching. Like, it was one of those things where, I was watching it with her, and then it got to a point where I was just like, I can't do this anymore.
Who's related to who? What's the family tree? Is there time travel?
Tell me when Tron shows up, because they teased that in season 1 and season 2.
And it never happens.
Yeah.
And it never happens.
And they talked about space paranoids, and it's
it
like...
never happened.
No. I looked for that lunchbox on Amazon. You can't find it.
No, it's fake.
I'm just imagining your wife watching Once Upon a Time going, if I turn off the television, that's how the terrorists win.
No, I would hear it from the other room like, oh, come on! Like, exclamations of how they would save the day or whatever. But
so your wife watches Once Upon a Time the same way I watch Voltron. Lots of yelling.
Yeah, I mean, except you like the
except
show.
Except I love Voltron.
Yeah.
Well,
mm.
I will say that, like, as far as this season of Red versus Blue goes, I do feel a little bit of that disjointedness. But then I get stuff like the Huggins and Griff road trip.
Oh, yeah.
And all of a sudden, I'm all in. Mm-hmm. And then I get stuff like Jax explaining time travel, and I'm all in again. So then we go to Camel Toe, and it starts to lose me
a tiny bit.
So it's one of those things, like, the bits where I'm in, I'm down, like, and it feels like the show I've been watching for 15, 16 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's just one of those things of going, like, how is this all going to parse out?
So let's, for now, let's swing into those bits. Let's talk about time travel. Let's talk about the three different versions of time travel, or the 2.5 different versions of time travel.
I feel like we've lined this out several times already on this podcast.
We have Terminator time travel, DBZ time travel, and Back to the Future time travel, basically. The closed loop, the alternate universe, and the kind of closed loop, but not maybe, because Marty McFly gets a grace period.
Wibbly wobbly timey wimey stuff.
Yeah.
Where?
Yeah, this felt very Red versus Bluey to me.
Yes.
Like, Jax is one of the most Red versus Blue characters that has been introduced. I would even say more so than the trio from the Mercs. I would say Jax is more of a traditional Red versus Blue character than the Mercs are.
He's very Blood Gulch.
Mm-hmm.
The Mercs are very much serious freaking business, but Jax is extremely Blood Gulch.
Yeah, they're definitely freelancer era style characters, and that's fine, and it worked for that arc. But if we're trying to recapture that spirit from the first couple of seasons, which I think Joe has been doing an amazing job, then Jax fits that 100%.
Oh, yeah. I definitely feel like he falls into that level of logic that the Blood Gulch characters follow into. He's like, if A and B will equal C, if a production is tortured, it will be genius.
It's like, you don't want that many flavors of torture in your production, like, and you definitely don't want them to be intentional.
That is absolutely a Blood Gulch sort of mentality.
You have lawsuits and exorcisms. Please stop.
I feel like Jax is a very... very strange combination. If I'm just going by like base knowledge, it would be. I think Jax is a combination of Donut and Griff, because of his peppiness, but also his just or no maybe no no maybe maybe not Griff
Sarge
maybe
in there for some insane single mindedness.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, but I think Jax is a combination of a couple of things that we love about various characters, pushed to their nth degree, and that's why he fits in so well.
See, yeah, I would throw in actually a little bit of Alpha Church in there, just with the rage that he spews at everyone around him.
That is, he should never have gotten power.
Oh, Jax is all of the blue team.
Especially not that quickly.
Jax is just all of the blue, various things from all of the blue
team. That's true, that's
put together.
I would give him a sprinkling of extreme red on top, but yeah, no.
Maybe some Florida as well. Some Captain Flowers.
Especially in last season when he's initially introduced and he's an idealistic intern. Now he's gone mad with power.
Wouldn't that make him Doc and O'Malley?
Also blue team.
I mean, nobody wants Doc and O'Malley.
Half blue team, all one person, since they're technically two people.
Yes. Yeah, but I love that he is the time travel expert.
Because of movies. He's not based on science, but
actually,
because of
it's not
movies.
Science, it's science fiction.
Somebody in chat, I want to call them out properly. Andrew Evers, do we think that Jax isn't the time travel expert that Dylan was referencing?
Oh, no.
Okay.
No. I'm sure that Dylan dropped him by name and went, he's here, go do a set visit, whatever. Like,
okay.
Dylan would not steer Carolina wrong.
Yeah, because
I miss her.
I miss her a lot, too, but you can't blame her for wanting to sit this one out.
It's not a science. I asked. I got laughed out of the building.
I'm wondering if it's not the expert she called at the end of the last season, who was like, the universe is going to explode. We're all going to get blackout drunk.
Well, I'm wondering if it's like a Canto Bight situation where in Last Jedi, where it's like, go get the expert. This is what they are. And then they run into a magical second expert. But this time it just happens to be somebody that they know.
What a crazy random happenstance.
Exactly.
See, and I do think she sent them directly to Jax, because she was stuck with Jax for how long and had to listen to how much of his rambling. She'd know that he knew.
Too long.
too long. But yeah, we have three separate versions of time travel. We are probably in a closed loop. We haven't figured out the paradox and free will thing quite yet. And honestly, I'm kind of putting a pin in that. Like, if you ever try to do that, let me know how the paradox goes. And like, all right, well, we've set the stage. That's going to happen.
I
They are eventually going to try to stop themselves from time traveling.
I I basically feel like we're in a closed loop. So, Bill and Ted rules is another way to refer to it.
Back to the air guitar. It always comes back to the air guitar.
You see, you got to make the noises with your mouth, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
And be excellent to each other.
Exactly.
But for me, I feel like this is where we're at, because every example that we've seen so far of them going back and trying to change something or interfering in some way has resulted in the status quo. There has been no change.
Catherine the Great, Christopher Reeve, everything in Caboose's slideshow with the burning of the Library of Alexandria, the London Fire, the Hindenburg.
No, but really, really quickly, I find that interesting.
And then the
how...
coffee at the cryogenics facility, which is what started off our freelancer seasons.
Whoops.
How far between, I mean, this is, if you're a history person, you might be able to answer this because I don't know off the top of my head. How far from the burning of the Library of Alexandria and the existence of Alexander the Great were there? Because we would have had paths crossing of Sarge picking up Alexander the Great and Caboose setting fire to the library.
It seems like Caboose was in the library for, if you will, a hot second.
Mm-hmm.
He got on fire. He did a couple of rapid jumps. And
yeah,
then
that's true.
That's what that seemed like to me.
Ugh.
I regret nothing, by the way.
I guess one way we'll figure it out is if any of the people that Sarge has plucked from time, if they get killed before we get to put them back, that could potentially cause a paradox.
It's possible, but I think we're so far into it's for comedy realms that
I don't know.
I don't know if that's ever going
to
come back.
Why establish rules if you're not going to adhere to them?
It's red versus blue. Do we care about
you
rules?
Still, like, we I know that, like, the continuity and wibbly wobbly timey wimey, all that other stuff, but they are going out of their way to point out that there are rules and internal logic to what's going on in this arc. And I don't feel like they would go against that for the sake of a one-timey joke. You still have to adhere to the internal logic of the story you're creating.
That's true, and that's kind of why I've put a pin in the whole paradox idea, like trying to stop themselves from time traveling. I would not be surprised if that is our season finale, is triggering the paradox and seeing where it goes.
I wonder if we're going to get a Next Generation-esque, like, Enterprise shows up, and with very, like, an infinite amount of
and
universes.
Then,
and,
yeah. And then Yellow Church.
Something.
I feel like they explained Yellow Church at one point. Did that happen or did I make that up?
They did, but...
Okay. But might as well, right?
Just trust me, it didn't work.
And Please Clap does bring up a point. Also, this season is called the Shizno Paradox.
Mm-hmm.
I think someone has to cause a paradox.
Oh, yeah.
I still think we're going to go back to season two and the first moment where we learned of the word Shizno. And we'll get it. I mean, a season to explain a joke, sure. Let's get there.
I mean, we do still have a Great Destroyer prophecy. And that was all of season two. The Great Destroyer has arrived. The end is here.
Mm-hmm.
So, who knows? Who even knows?
Yep.
that's basically what this is summed up as right now. Just kind of, who knows? All right, I'm going to leave this to the table. I've got three other topics on the board. We have Wash, we have Camel Toe, and we have Donut. What do you guys want to talk about next?
Wash.
Sure.
Oh, honey. This is one of those stories that I'm there for. Even if I didn't really appreciate the fact that it's happening, like, I don't... Again, I'm not terribly fond of, we took this turn with his character, but I'm enjoying the execution.
Well,
such as it is.
Terrible choice of
phrasing.
Words.
Phrasing.
My phrasing has been on point tonight. Thank you.
Mark, since you weren't here last week, when in the previous episode when Wash has that memory moment, what was your reaction?
I think it was something like, oh. to be perfectly frank.
My poor sweet boy.
But I agree with Katie, this shows the ramifications of everybody's actions. And it's one of those things of consequences. There has to be consequences for some of these actions, and it is fun to live in cartoon world where pizza doesn't exist and Griff is a silly funny person. But I think the thing that grounds it and makes people understand and care about various characters, especially Wash, and Wash has been such a very important and integral part of these people's lives. And I'm not even putting it as characters. I'm just as these people's lives. Wash has been a linchpin. Whether it's no matter what side he was on, Wash has been there. And I thought that I figure we're going to get a little bit more. Hopefully, we get a little bit more in the next episode. We don't have to wait, but. I care so much about how seeing him being shot in the head affected him, and it's hard when you're wearing a helmet and we can't see your facial reactions to something like that. What did it trigger? What did he remember? Does he suddenly have a thought of, I don't remember it like this, or something like, what did that do to Wash? The next five episodes, I don't care if they're all about Wash.
I'd be very happy, honestly.
Yeah, but it's one of those things where they've set something up. It's put Carolina in a terrible situation, something that she can't handle. And that's very interesting as well. That's at the top of the season, I mentioned not having Carolina and Wash is a detriment. And right now, this storyline, aside from me just being a big Griff fan, but this storyline is the one I think everybody is caring the most about.
If you look at the sound design, and there goes the phrasing. Goodbye, everybody. But during that scene,
look with your eyes,
when the camera flips onto his helmet and you can see the reflection of the take over and over and over, and you get that really high-pitched whine that keeps happening every time his memory shorts out, and then you can hear Tucker yelling at him to get down, reusing that line from the scene in season 15, like, this is some rough immersion therapy, you guys. So even without showing us an expression, they've made it very clear that he is not okay, capital N, capital O. And I've noticed that every time he has one of these memory moments, he gets really angry afterwards.
Yeah.
Of course he does.
It's so upsetting because just seeing him lash out at Carolina.
Twice.
Understandably so. But, like, he insisted, I'm good enough to do the obstacle course. And then when he falls and gets hurt, he lashes out at her. And then when she's getting ready to leave, he insists on going with her because he's bored out of his mind. He's like, no, it'll be fine. I gotta get out of here. And then, you know, he goes off and wanders off on his own. And then this happens and he immediately lashes out at her again. I feel so bad for her because you're watching your friend deteriorate and you don't know what to do or how to fix it or how to support them in that moment. And like, so watching Carolina, like, just kind of like, not necessarily like, like set, sort of like that Dane Cook skit, like where you're about to be struck by a moving vehicle. Like she wants to help, but there's not really much that she can do, and feeling the guilt that comes with that.
Well, and I'm also trying to figure out where the line is, because we had this really big deal about Carolina didn't tell Wash how the extent of his injuries, didn't tell him how messed up his memory really is. And then the very next episode, it's, oh, I know things are messed up. I still have gaps in my memory. So I wonder if he doesn't know that his short-term memory is on the fritz, because he knows that there's issues with the long-term in terms of what happened in the murder fridge and afterwards. But I wonder if she hasn't told him that his short term is also not functioning well.
Well, I mean, maybe she told him,
and he forgot.
It's possible.
That's what I'm thinking. But I feel like she tried at least once.
We had this conversation, and Gray made a very big deal out of you didn't tell him everything, and Carolina made a big deal out of I can't. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's. She told him and he forgot. I think it's she made the choice not to.
Well,
I think it's possible that she knows that she can't. Based on the situation, she can. But then he won't remember, so it'll make it a moot point anyway.
No, that's what I'm saying, is that from her perspective, is that like her rationale would be, like, if I tell him, I'm going to have that same conversation over and over and over
and we've
again
all seen 50 First Dates. We know
I
how this ends.
Can't
said no one
handle that.
I was gonna say
I've seen 50 First
who is
Dates.
We all because I ain't part of that.
That's a great movie.
I like that movie.
That was a date movie for my wife and I.
One of Adam Sandler's better ones.
Yeah,
for
really
sure.
Good.
Very charming.
It ends every morning. His wife with short term memory loss has to watch a tape of her life. So that she can be caught up in however long it is and wake up and see her children and see him and see her family and get it because she would wake up, look over and be like, what am I doing here? And act violently. So it's a very beautiful movie with a couple of dumb jokes and some possibly offensive ones, but it's
an Adam Sandler movie.
Yeah.
And works so hard to get her to fall in love with him every day.
it's
fine.
but it's one of those things where, and you see it there and you see it here, and you can try as hard as you want, but the body doesn't let you succeed. Sad. I want to see.
For those of you in the audio thing, we're all just kind of doing the Kermit nod at each other. Like, yeah.
I'm Christian Bale. Yeah.
That gif just on repeat.
That gif on repeat, except there's three of us.
But that's none of my business.
And on that note, here's a thing that I would like all of you to remember to do, and that is to go over to iTunes. Mm-hmm. Support us. Love us. Let them know that you would like this show to continue on with the Red versus Blue and the Camp Camp and the Ruby when it comes back and the Genlock when it eventually happens. And the I could go down all of the shows that we do, but at this point we're at like six?
Quite a
well,
few.
Well, I Many. Mean, some of them don't exist presently, so we can't count. We can't count our crunch time because we don't know, and we definitely can't count X-Ray and Vav. But we've done it.
But I mean, they're not on the thing anymore. We got five shows on our thing.
But they're there in the archives for you to enjoy.
Oh, and Ruby Chibi starts this weekend.
Yeah.
So, Lord, that's true.
We'll figure out a time to talk about that.
We'll do another conspiracy episode.
Squeeze it in. It'll be fun.
It'll be so fun.
But yeah, if you want to support us, the best way you can do that, head over to iTunes, find Rooster Teeth Reviews, rate us 5 stars, subscribe, leave us a nice little comment telling us what you like. And yeah, that lets the producers know that you like the show and you want to keep us around. And when you do that, you get a shout out on the show.
But not on iTunes right now because we don't have any new reviews. We know that we have new listeners because I'm looking at these comments here from last week's Camp Camp episode. Chicago critic Gerald says, yes, more Camp Camp. And a Russian name that I don't know how to pronounce says, it was a good podcast and thank you. You deserve more subs. Thank you.
Aww.
And then somebody also submitted another one that's technically a camp activity. So I'm going to read that next week.
Yeah. But, put a pin in that.
But looking at, we had a lot of comments on the last Red versus Blue episode. We have Used156, One Dumb Gamer, Sean Wadey, 38 SSM, Nicholas Brennan, and Kendall Peterson, and Sweeney Todd 98. A lot of theories on Red versus Blue. And if we have a... No, we don't have any time.
No.
If we had any time, we would read and discuss them. But
some familiar names in there and some new ones.
Some new ones. Yeah. And if you're listening to this after the fact, thank you. If you're listening to this live, thank you. But make sure... Google Podcasts just came out, and we're going to figure out how we can show up on that as well. So if you're not on a Apple device, we can come to you as well. So please help support the show, spread the word, and we can do more.
Do the thing, win the stuff. And as long as you're supporting AfterBuzz shows, you should also support other AfterBuzz channels.
Yeah, you know, we talk a lot about the iTunes side of things, but the YouTube side of things is just as important. And now we need your help. We are asking you to please subscribe to one or more of our YouTube channels. Besides helping us a ton, here's what's in it for you. It caters to the specific content that's already liked directly to you. It brings your favorite after shows so you don't have to sneak them out. And it suggests content from the other channels or podcasts that might interest you. Mm-hmm. Subscribing to one of our YouTube channels will also help you discover new shows we're sure you'll love. Since you're already tuned in to the animation channel, you might enjoy our Voltron after show.
Which we are all a part of one way or another.
Yep.
Indeed. And there, you know, there's also South Park, the anime weekly channel that's, or the Anime Weekly Show that's goes. Attack on Titan may or may not be coming back.
Yuri on Ice may or may not be coming back, because it announced earlier this week that the movie's coming out in August and they're trying to get the next season started before the end of 2018.
Yeah,
and we loved doing that show. We actually had one of the fans of the Voltron show just started watching Yuri on Ice and went back and watched the after show, and it just reminded me how much fun that was. That was Emma Fyfe is the lead, myself, Stacey Shuttleworth, that you all know, and Alexis Torres, Blue Lion, hashtag Leg Day. So yeah, that was a fun show too. If you watched Yuri on Ice, go back and check that out. If you watched Attack on Titan, go watch that. If you watched Sword Art Online, go back and watch that one.
Way back when.
Don't watch that.
No, go. Watch the after show. It's fun.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
Katie's having PTSD.
Yeah. There was an episode you weren't there for.
Yeah, and I regret that, but can't be helped.
I regret it too.
Anyway. But remember, we have channels for other genres too. Please don't be shy about subscribing to them. Mainly the sci-fi superhero one, because that's where I'm at a lot.
If you watch a show, we probably have an after show for it.
So look for them. And if you're worried about pesky notifications, don't be. They're optional. It's easy. Hit that subscribe button now, and it's even easier for the AfterBuzz experience. And if you let us know that you did in the comments, we'll shout you out on air, a lot like we do with iTunes. Thanks for being the best fans. We promise to continue to do our best to serve you. You guys rock. We love you.
Again, do the thing. Get the shout out. You okay, Mark?
Yeah, I can't get them free. Let's move on.
Failing your magic trick? All right.
You can do it. I believe in you.
Let's move on.
I think at this point, this subject is pretty much just the latter half of episode 10 and also the road trip. So let's talk about Tucker and Sis and Griff and Donut. God
Poor
bless.
Donut.
The road trip was one of my... This budding friendship with Griff and Huggins has been, I think, one of the highlights of this season for me. It's so good.
Absolutely. Griff's personality and where he's at right now in terms of the pizza quest, in terms of his own narrative, doing everything he can to avoid an inciting incident. And it's finally gotten to the point where Huggins has to interfere. And... the seeing their two personalities work off of each other, you know, she has the peppiness of some of the other Blood Gulch members, like Caboose and like Donut, but she also has intelligence. She's an otherworldly
She's Sister, Caboose, and Donut all wrapped into one brightly
but with common sense.
Yeah. That's where Sister comes in.
And it's... hey, she knows what's up.
This is true.
Seeing the two of them work off of each other has been some of the most enjoyable. It's definitely been one of the most enjoyable things this season. I would say it's been one of the most enjoyable things just over the course of several seasons. Hmm. Just in terms of character interaction and dialogue, in terms of comedy. Like, it is absolutely adorable seeing Griff warm up to her and then kind of try to impress her too, like at one point
Die Hard.
Yes.
Retelling Die Hard, and then like, but you were so into the story, I didn't want to interrupt you, and I'm like, can I take you home? Which is kind of what Sister Act asked her. I'm a particle and a wave. I'm like, oh my god, yes.
I'm off by light.
By light, yep.
She turned pink. It was so cute. One of my
Huggins for MVP.
I think the main thing from this storyline that I got is that Griff wasn't open to a new friendship because he just got out of a friendship. No, but he...
He forcibly ejected from a friendship.
He and Simmons were so close, and they had such a rough last couple of instances, I guess would be a good way to put it, that he wasn't ready to open himself up, especially when nobody would listen to him, and he thought that all of these other people were starting to be his friends as well. You would think, after however long this group has been together... But just due to necessity and Huggins being Huggins, they become really good friends. And one of my favorite moments, Cam brings it up, is when they're at Camel Toe. It's like Griff and he goes, and Huggins.
Huggins has a name. It's Huggins.
It's Huggins.
Yes.
They're adorable and they're really good friends. And I'm interested to see what happens when Simmons gets back into the picture.
Yes.
And how how if and how Griff is, quote, using Huggins to sort of cope, and he's just he's been able to express himself in ways that we hadn't seen him and Simmons, and I'm actually surprised. I'd be surprised if we don't get a moment of him going a little bit, getting a little bit too comfortable with Huggins and calling her Simmons.
Huh. Hmm. See, given the way that the season has been running, I'd put my eggs in the basket of Simmons getting very jealous of Huggins and trying to compete somehow. Yeah. Whether or not Huggins pings on it and competes back is variable.
That'll be interesting because, yeah, the two groups are so separated right now. But what I kind of like seeing is that most relationships in Red versus Blue are like stem from animosity, and it takes years before characters warm up to each other, or at the very least cease to drive each other crazy. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's a little bit of animosity there at first because Griff, again, is so reluctant to go on a quest, but I don't think we've seen two characters warm up to each other as quickly as these two, just in terms of runtime.
That it took them months instead of literal years.
Mm-hmm. And just that little fist bump was the best.
That's what
thing.
Chat's talking about too.
Yep.
Lone Wolf 1499, the fist bump was a nice touch.
Excellent
cool touch.
Use yeah. of the mocap. I approve wholeheartedly. Yes.
And I cannot wait to see, since we are getting interdimensional now, I can't wait to see Huggins and Nerys talk.
Yeah.
Yes.
The cutest thing in the world.
That's then celestial body of light.
We finally make it to Camelot, which is now Cameltoe, and we have Tucker and Sis, and I have problems with Tucker this season.
Little bit.
And that, I think, is something that I'll need to put a pin in terms of discussion, just because we're running out of time. But I feel like we've lost a little bit of development for him and might be overcompensating in a different direction. It's one of those things where there are parts of this season that are so ridiculously super good, and then there are parts of the season where I'm just kind of like, okay.
He's not dealing with what happened to Wash. And he's reverted. He's reverted to, and this actually, this reminds me of early seasons Tucker. And this goes back to this being sort of like a mirror of season two, or utilizing some stuff from season two, because this is a lot of the stuff that we would see from him. And though it was cute, to see the page call him all of the things that Griff called him.
Was that Sir Lancelot?
I think so.
But that's a callback to their relationship, and I would have liked it if it was like Griff shouting stuff from the other room and the page like trying to repeat it because that's his job. But
I have one job on this ship.
Yeah, and I'm gonna do it. So it's interesting. It's interesting.
I love the idea of him being Excalibur. Or being King Arthur, because like everybody mistakes his sword for Excalibur. I love the idea of his magic sword being Excalibur. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. As far as the character development goes, and I've been thinking about this a little bit, you're absolutely right. He had I feel like we can all agree he's regressed, but I'm only just now thinking about it too. He got to a certain place when he and Epsilon made amends. He was at a certain place, and then Epsilon died. And all last season, he was avoiding the obvious, and it nearly got Wash killed. And then they go off on this pizza quest. Yeah, they stopped the bad guy, but ultimately, to be fair, Tucker, you know, since he hasn't touched base with Wash, he's lost two friends. And that can be hard to come to terms with. And so sort of chasing your various distractions is one way to deal with it, especially when the personality that you're paired up with is one that isn't going to put up with your immature nonsense.
Someone you think that you can identify with but ends up being the wake-up call.
What Sister's doing is she's holding up a mirror to the way he's actually acting, and instead of adjusting his behavior for the better, he's more like...
Put the mirror down.
Yeah, he's more like... Yeah, it's amplifying the way he's acting as opposed... I mean, he's wearing a crown!
Yeah, he's
like, I'm the king!
On his helmet.
He has to start with the man in the mirror. She's asking him to change his ways.
And on that note, let's talk about Donut a little bit.
Poor donut. I was upset with the way they treated him.
He is, well, it's the way they always treat him, which sucks, but is true.
Same but God. Also God. Can Same we talk God. About God?
God is Kronos. Let's be real. God is the God of time.
God is a clock, which means God is round. Because clocks are made of circles.
Clocks are made of circles. I was gonna say, okay. This is another one from Andrew Evers, brought up how wondering... He's surprised that they aren't using Santa as a plot dump, and I was wondering, we're seeing an off screen voice, but the voice is so different and so crisp, and it sounds like a generic and this isn't an insult to the actor, but it's something, but for us as a society listening to voices like this sounds like a generic casting call for a God voice. This is something that's supposed to make us think a particular way about this character before they switch it on us.
And this is, you know, people are going, who is the voice of Krovos? Which is what I want to know. I'm kind of in the Troy Baker corner.
I don't think so.
He's coming to RTX.
They lumped it doesn't him sound like Troy Baker.
In a lot of the press release stuff that we got, they lumped him in with, it could be a misdirect, but they lumped him in with the gamer crowd as opposed to...
Well, he is better known for the, for, yeah, VO and gamings, but... The fact that we can't place it could be anyone.
I think that's the point.
I think they should do what the Prince of Egypt did and just like have the
Val Kilmer
send it down river.
Have the character that's speaking to God be the voice of God. I think that would have been interesting. I don't. That's not what they did, but I thought God, that would have been
the conversations that Donut would have with Donut God.
He's already fabulous.
Again,
Jesus,
a circle. It's a circle within a circle. The
donuts
circle is
are
complete.
Circles.
He's already fabulous.
Clocks
Jesus.
Are made of donuts.
So, yeah. So you'd think the fact that O'Malley was also working for quote unquote God would. Yeah. Nope. Donut. Danger. God bless.
Danger, danger.
So that is a red flag if ever I've seen one.
And lightish we end with Krovos saying, lightish red flag. Yep. Yeah. I will save your friends, but you have to do something for me. I don't like how this is going. Mm. I don't.
It sounds like something Satan would say.
Little bit.
Please Clap is holding out for Troy Baker being involved in Nomad instead.
That would be great.
Specifically, what do you mean instead? ¿Por qué no los dos?
Specifically the Minotaur governor, but why can't he be El Rey?
Oh, yes. Terrifying as
El Rey. I mean, it's Troy Baker. He could be everyone. Mm-hmm. I mean, he could conceivably be... everyone.
As we're wrapping up, because we have to wrap up, I'm gonna get some quick stuff from the chat. Andrew Evers says Tucker got Norded. Lone Wolf says Tucker not being the leader could be the reason why he's going back to how he was, since he doesn't have to be serious like he was on Chorus.
That's fair.
Mm-hmm. Rowan Farty says, crazy idea, what if someone messes with the timeline before the Reds and Blues finally reunite and Griff forgets the existence of Simmons and thinks that Huggins is his longtime friend?
Oh no.
And Sam Green, who's been commenting a lot this episode as well, says I think Troy for Genlock.
I like that. That would be great.
It'd be cool.
Again, I why not all of the above? I don't see why we would have to do... Again. Oh, he's only on this. No, he's Troy Baker. He can do anything.
Cast him in everything.
It's expensive.
This is also true.
Cool.
He's so handsome and talented.
Anyway.
Thank you.
Yeah, good times and great oldies.
I'm thanking you for him.
Bless this ridiculous show. Again, we're not doing predictions because two of us have already seen the episode that's in Sponsor Town right now. So, we should be back in 2 weeks with the next two episodes. Mm-hmm. Keep an eye out for that. And in the meantime, Mark, where can the people find you?
I wanted to mention we're still figuring out our schedule for next week because it is 4th of July. We're going to talk about it after the show. We have a pretty good time frame of where it can go. But please make sure to follow all of us on Twitter to figure out where that's going to be. Me, I'm at Mark B. Donica. You can follow Stacey at Stacey Shuttles. She doesn't do the Red versus Blue because it's 16 seasons. but she'll be back for Camp next week. We as of right now, we do have a guest for next week's camp, and oh boy, do we have some camps to talk about. Also, go to our TeePublic site, teepublic.com/theroosterteam. We just put up something new last week as I Survived the Y Games. That's cute. I Don't Like the Ships You Like is also available. That's a fun one. That's a popular one. It helps support us writing Welcome to Vale. We're going to put out an episode in July. I'm saying it on the air to keep me honest. And yeah, we're looking forward to RTX. Oh boy, it's a a month away. Oh boy, I should probably get a hotel room.
I should buy my ticket.
Flight.
I should buy my plane ticket.
Yeah. Well, now that we know everything. But either way, we're going to be doing camp next week, Monday or Tuesday. Stay tuned for more information on that.
I'm Megan. You guys can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at The Menguin. That's THEMENGUIN. In case you couldn't tell from the shameless plug earlier, check out No Love Lost, where my co-host Will Link and I do a Lost retrospective. He loves it. I hate it. Follow us at No Love Lost Pod.
And I'm Katie Cullen. You can follow me all over the social medias, as well as on YouTube and Twitch at Kiaxet. That is K-I-A-X-E-T. If you want to see reactions to these episodes, those live on that YouTube channel. As we said, Voltron is coming back this next... it's on Mondays at 7. We have a grand old time, you guys. Bless everything. It's all
nuts. And a great guest, I'm pretty sure. This last week, you had Lauren and
we had the producers and showrunners, yes.
And next week is going to be great.
I do my best to get guests as often as we can, and I have a relative level of success. So come back around for Voltron. That is always super fun. Thank you guys so much for watching, and we'll see you next time.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
It's Huggins!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.